Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Andrew on the board a little late today. We had all kinds of stuff with the storm last night. So we're here. Do we have the Professor Kevin?
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing okay.
I'm fresh from my experience at the Sox game last night.
Yeah, was it great?
They were suspended after four pitches.
Okay. So by Sox standards, that was a pretty darn good night.
It was a good night. S&P futures are up 8, NASDAQ up 29. I will have to regale you, however, with the changes in the world that have, you know, since the last time I was there. And I'm sure some people S&P futures up, I was looking at the last, yesterday. S&P's up, futures up 175, NASDAQ up 10, Dow down 3. So we're kind of doing nothing ahead of these NVIDIA earnings tonight, which is somewhat expected. NVIDIA earnings are now becoming, it's almost like earnings plays in the queues tonight because of this NVIDIA. I mean, the volatility difference between tonight, tomorrow, and I'm trying to figure out whether or not these guys are going to get their earnings before 3:15, where you can still trade, or after, which makes kind of a difference. there I was. I'm going to the Sox game, right? For those who don't know, I've pretty much sworn off ever going to one of these games because I want my own ticket. I don't want the world tracking me. I know that this is old guy talk. Kevin, I just don't want it. They don't need to know. I mean, they think they do. They just don't. Nobody needs to know that I went to the ball game. Nobody needs to know that I bought a beer. Nobody needs to know any of this stuff. They think they do. Anybody thinks that somebody's not tracking you or doing something. Anyway, so I agree to go to this because, like I said before, one of the gentlemen was 80 years old. He was my teacher, essentially, when I got to the CBOE floor. Brilliant guy, and he's having his 80th birthday party in one of the skyboxes. So I say, okay, so it takes me a while. Now, in order to get your ticket, you got to sign up with Ticketmaster, which I have no desire to sign up with. Now, of course, you have to give them your email. You got to give them something else. They don't need to know my email. But they got my email, so now
I.
But so now I'm hacking away. Finally get through to the ticket. So of course I get to the park, and it doesn't work, right? So I have to sign in all over again, which I'm doing. Outside the 97 degree heat, sunshine where I can barely see the phone. Well, first of all, I get there and there's a parking lot back when the Sox had people. It was a prepaid lot. It was for season ticket holders. But any game that wasn't full, you could always get in the place, right? You know, you had to pay. But So I pull in. I got my sneaky way of getting there, which you don't need a sneaky way anymore because there's nobody going there. So I go down Canal Street, go up to 31st, go in the outside gate of the place, and, of course, the gate's closed. I'm going, okay. So that's not going to work. So the guy says, oh, no, there's two guys standing there. I go, why is the gate closed? Well, you got to go around, go to the stop sign, make a right. So I go up basically two blocks, take a right at the stop sign. Now, there's nobody around. So I go up a block, and I see a lot to my left, and there's the cones, and I go to make a left turn. Oh, no, no, you can't go a left turn. So then one guy's motioned me I could park there on the street. Well, I don't know the area that well, so I didn't want to park on the street and risk that. So they go, they say, well, you got to go back. I said, I just want to get over there in the parking lot B. Oh, you got to go down the street. Now, there's this big, wide street. And in the middle of the street, they got a zillion of these cones laid out. There isn't a car around. I'm the only car there. Go through the cones. Okay, so I head back through the cones all the way back down to 31st Street, where I was before. And there's a gate maybe 50 feet around the corner than the one I was originally at. That one's open. So I go in, there's just one guy. I see it's $30. I'm thinking $30 to park's a little rich. So I pull out my wallet, grab the 30. Oh, no, no cash. What do you mean no cash? No, we need a credit card. It's all because of COVID. I go, there's no COVID anymore. Oh, yeah, I know. Well, then what kind of an excuse is it? Well, it's probably just an excuse. So I give my guy my American Express card. No, I don't need that parking on my American Express card. I don't need these bleeps having my American Express number. I don't want emails from the Sox to, you know, whatever. I'm just saying, Kevin, I'm over this shit, basically. So then the guy goes, okay, well, go all the way down. And I'm thinking, I don't see anybody. I'm driving. I'm the third or fourth car in the place, and there's two guys down there motioning me into this spot and making sure I'm there exactly correctly. Kevin, this is 6 o'clock. This is an hour before the game. I'm the fifth car in the lot, and there's two guys making sure I park exactly perfectly.
Yes. Must be lined up properly.
Yeah. So I go across the street into the, you know, where the elevator is to get to the skyboxes. And of course, I can't get the ticket up on the phone. So he goes, oh, go on over to the ticket, you know, places. They'll help you out. So I go over there, and of course, I did manage to get the thing working. So I come back, and they scan me, right? So in I go. Got to go through the metal detector. I get to the elevator, go upstairs, and of course I get scanned. And the people are really pleasant. There's a lot of older Southside, just regular Southside people that work at Sox Park. They got to be having a horrible summer, Kevin. I mean, what are the beer people? What's anybody doing? Anyway, I go up to. There's about 15, 20 people into the big. I don't know what they call it. It's behind home plate on the skybox level. It's like a club there. I don't know if anybody can go up there or what the deal is, but they got a big buffet going. It looks really nice. Can't be 20 people in there. I go by all these skyboxes. I don't see any of them with the doors even open. And we find ours. And it's these guys got the skybox like 3 weeks ago. Kevin, it's on the first level right behind the dugout. It's like one of the best ones. And they got it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, the lower level suites are pretty nice. You get all the amenities plus the box seat view.
Well, of course, because it was 98 degrees, the windows are all shut. So that kind of sucked. But it was better than, you know, being 98 degrees, I guess. So, I mean, when I pulled in, it's bright sunshine. There isn't a cloud in the sky. I'm listening to the radio, and the guy goes, yeah, well, there's this thunderstorm out in, you know, Huntley or someplace. Might be coming this way. I'm going, okay. So I get in there, and I meet all these people I haven't seen in ages. So I'm having a nice time. Finally, they run out on the field. Four pitches. I look out. It's pouring. Absolutely pouring. I go, this ain't going to last. And all of a sudden, They start the game when it's pouring. They pitch four pitches, and then they run out and put the tarp in. So the game is technically suspended 2.5 hours later. They're going to make it up today, and I guess they're going to start with whatever it was, 3-1 or 2-2.
So you're going to go back and get your game watching?
Well, you know, this is the weird part. Are they going to give these people another shot at the skybox? I mean, they spent enough money in there between desserts and everything. They didn't buy much booze, though. It wasn't a drinking crowd. A couple people had beers. Most people were Diet Cokes. Not old people. So I don't know. I mean, what are they going to offer them? They obviously going to pay the food and booze tab. You know, I'm sure they're going to leave a nice tip. And so now what? Are they going to give them another skybox, or are they going to just give them? They can't just be going to give them 12 tickets in the park somewhere. I mean, I don't know. What do you think they're going to do?
They will probably give them another shot somewhere. A crummy day, you know, they give them like the Bears opening day.
Well, this was a Tuesday night. They're doing worse than that.
So if they give them that, then everybody's going to watch the Bears game on the TV in there rather than watching the White Sox game. But who wouldn't consider that a good deal?
Well, you know, it could have been. I took one look outside, and it might have, maybe, I'm going to say, I couldn't see right below us. I'm thinking maybe 1,500, 2,000 people in a place. Skybox is the one next to us. They had all this food in there, and they had five people in there. I mean, and everybody is so pleasant, these people, when you walk in and out, hey, did you have a good time, blah, blah, welcome on back, you know. I mean, the people who work at White Sox Park, I've always thought were spectacular. I mean, there's a lot of, I don't know how many parks do this, and I don't know the whole details, but if you went up behind the box seats and you walked around, obviously there's creatures on one side and people on the other. On the one side, away from the park, and on the outside part of the aisle, was all the White Sox concessions. You know, your normal ballpark stuff. And they got pretty good food there. The other side were individual people leased the spots. And they would, and it would be somebody's, it would be like Kevin's Dogs or something. They have the world's best dogs there. Next one would be Bratz. And it was this one lady, these ladies we knew, had the beer, what was it, the Batter's Box beer stand. I never bought a beer anywhere else because these ladies were so terrific. We'd give them a nice tip. And, what kind of year are they having, Kevin? I hope they're not having to pay this lease, like if there's people there. I hope there's an adjustment
They're probably struggling like crazy.
Yeah. I don't forget, there was section of a playoff game. I think it might have been the year they won the World Series. But so one of the guys we would hang with gets these two walkie-talkies, and he puts one of the walkie-talkies up with the girls. the thing would go off when he's coming up wanting four beers, right? Because he obviously didn't want to wait, but we'd been there all season. And there's all these, you know, as JD used to say, good time Charlie's in there for the playoff game. So one guy walks up there to get one of our group, and she pours out four beers, and she puts them aside. The guy comes up, and she gives them to him. The guy in line goes, "Hey, what are you doing? You're waiting in line." Typical Southside young lady. She looks him right in the eye, and she goes, "He's been here all year giving me a nice tip. By the way, I just met you." The guy looks at her and goes, "Okay." Okay. She was not backing down, and he just said, "Okay." I loved it.
That is great.
So what's going on in the world, Kevin, other than everything?
Well, that was going to be my question. Happy NVIDIA Day for starters.
Yeah, now this has become a big event. They come out, and they usually beat, and the guy is the greatest, I wasn't going to say two-bit Carney Huckster, he's the greatest spokesman, comes out and says everything's terrific, and obviously, I would never trade on this because if I do anything in there today, I've already looked. The spreads I normally do look a little expensive. I will mention where the straddle is as soon as I can get it up on my machine here. But they've been, all these things have been moving like more than you would expect, more than the market expects. Not me. I mean, nobody asks me. But stocks at 128.71. 128 straddle last night went out at 670 and 715, so we're talking $14. So the market estimate is that it's going to move, that the probability is around $14. Obviously, if you're a buyer of that, you want it to move more than $14, and if you're a seller, you hang on to your behind and hope it doesn't move $14, more than $14. So that's kind of a lot. I mean, it's roughly what, an 8 or 9% move. Some of them are more. I looked at a couple last night. The one I looked at that was a 15% move. It was one of these retail. It was Foot Locker. That's a move. But then, some of these stocks have been moving huge on these earnings. I mean, more than I can really remember ever. Since I've been doing this for a long time. But they've got the earnings coming out. There's a lot of stuff that really worries me about that firm, Kevin. And it has nothing to do with the price. Not that I just. 19% of their customer base is Microsoft, and that's fine. But boy, if that ever changes, Microsoft ever says we're out of this, we got somebody else do AI cheaper, or we're buying it from somebody else,
or if Microsoft says we're going to acquire a chip company and we're going to start making our own.
Yeah, I mean I'm not saying.
But imagine like being the robotics company that had Amazon. For a while, boy, you were happy. They were buying all kinds of robots for their distribution centers. until they bought a company and then kicked off and told all of the told all of the existing customers, sorry, we're only taking care of ourselves now.
Well, and I've got actually two or three real worries about the market. And I don't worry at all anymore. I mean, I did for a long time, and Kevin, I'm pretty honest. For a long time, I should have been longer for my clients because I recognized what the Fed was doing. I never believed they were going to make it a long-term plan. Because I remember the bad old days, but obviously nobody else does. Inflation. So never did I dream that 30 years after, the 70s and 80s, that people would be doing the exact same thing. And they are. Only they're doing it better this time because they've been able to lie to people about the CPI and other stuff to where people don't think they're not doing as well as they used to. They don't quite know why.
Well, that's the mentality. It didn't work last time because we didn't do it big enough.
Well, not just big enough, but it's been done since the Romans, since everybody. I mean, let's pour more money in the system so few people benefit. The people who can borrow cheap benefit, and people who can't don't. I mean, you'd never expect in a country like America that allegedly talks about the middle class, we're going to have two people that are running for president talk ad nauseum about helping the middle class between now and November, and nobody in the last 24 years, which is 12 years of Republicans or Democrats, has helped the middle class one spit. And it's done nothing but degrade every single year, no matter who's in office. And yet people buy this crap. I don't get it. But, then again, you have no power. What else are you going to do? I mean, it's not like there's a third party. There's nobody else. I mean, you're stuck with voting for one of these two people. I usually, can bail out into the libertarian camp, and what did Hal say? He's a buffoon, too. Don't vote for him. So now where am I at? It's one of you guys.
When a libertarian tells you don't vote for the libertarian, you know he's a clown.
Yeah. So where does that leave? Now, out of the group, who do you think I should vote for? Well, Flanagan won't come out of his apartment, so you can't vote for him. Lou, he might be too more defense-oriented, but Lou, Hal, I don't know. I don't know if Hal's ready for Washington. Who do you think? Russell, maybe? You? Mike Murphy?
Hell no, not me.
What about Mike Murphy?
No. We'll go all in on Carl.
Carl? Oh God.
We're gonna take names and kick ass.
He lasts a week before he stresses out.
he wouldn't stress out. Impeachment proceedings would begin.
He could be the first guy impeached before he even took the oath. Imagine that. God. Anyway, what about the whole group? Can we go in as co-counsels like they had in Rome?
Well, we go in as a management team.
Oh God, who's the chief on this thing, Mike?
I'll take that job. I don't mind being being a spokesperson as long as I don't have to do anything. I'll delegate all that to you guys.
No, but you're one of the best workers. I'm a much better delegator.
Oh, I'm a good delegator.
Oh God.
Yeah, I don't like to work.
Oh, God. He sits on his ass all day. He doesn't do anything. He's my cousin. so that's the...
But I keep tabs, and I make a good voice of the, voice for the whole thing. I'll stand up and speak. We'll get a little visionary comments, some visionary commentary. Yeah, we can make that work.
What did the Klingon guy call the Vulcans? The... Lily tongue spokesman or loser spokesman for the Federation or something? some disparaging remark. In one Star Trek episode. Anywho, I came back from the game last night. Kevin is boy, I tell you what, the apple does not fall far from the tree. I remember my mother telling somebody once. I watched Gone with the Wind twice. When I was 18, all I thought about was the dresses and the parties. When I was 35, all I thought about was the wounded. How people's perception change in life. And I went to a Sox game last night. All I kept thinking about, where's all these people that used to work here and this was their job? There's no beers being sold tonight. And plus, how many people don't want to sell? So I got to pay $11.50 or $10.50 a beer, put it on my credit card, and I think they automatically throw a tip on it or something. I mean, like... There's nobody there, Kevin. This is livelihood for how many people? probably, what, 3,000? 2,500? It's got to be down to how many? 500? When's the last time the upper deck's been open? I mean, how can they be that bad? And we were in a discussion last night, the guys that I was there with, Marty is a stone-cold Sox fan from forever. He's from the South Side. I think he went to, where the hell did he go? I mean, he might have gone to Brother Rice, I'm not sure. But he's like, how can these guys be, everybody was outraged. Explain to us, because they asked somebody there last night to explain, and I go, where the hell's Kevin when we need him? Explain to us before a quick break. How do they not get the lottery pick this year?
Well, the Major League Baseball got tired of teams tanking on purpose. So if you get in the lottery this year, you can't be in the lottery.
Or how many teams were in the lottery?
What?
How many teams were in the lottery?
It's maybe 9 or something like that.
Right, so they do the same thing. If you're the crummiest team, you get 9 balls. If you're the second team, you get 8 balls. They do like
yeah, it's a weighted lottery, but you don't get to be in the lottery. So they pick 3rd or something like 3rd this year. So they don't get to be there next year.
They picked 5th last year, actually.
Okay, 5th. So, but they were in the lottery last year because they were bad, and they don't get to be there this year.
Well, what is the nature?
And what's interesting about that is the Sox were not trying to tank this season.
You know, no.
That's probably the most damning aspect of the whole thing is they weren't trying to suck, and yet they suck like, you know, the suckiest sucks who ever sucked, to go with, Homer Simpson in there. That would be a good bumper, by the way, that we can bring in.
Well, they foolishly, I'm not saying you should never count on anybody, they foolishly count on the third baseman. He's never played. Mankata, or what's his name?
Yeah.
So they got the kid from the Cubs, which they thought was a future Hall of Famer in left field. He never played. So finally they got rid of him. The shortstop.
Well, yeah, but this is not new, Tom.
No, but I'm saying the shortstop. All these guys self-destructing over the last 3 years. They were young players. They're going to be the core of this team for forever. It was the shortstop, the left fielder, the center fielder, and the third baseman. Right? Essentially.
One of them. Be their building blocks, and they were going to have this window where they could compete for championships.
And not one of the guys is playing. The center fielder is playing, and he's just got off of, 3 months not playing or something. So, I mean, they got like none of those guys. The people that they drafted last year, didn't they draft a kid out of high school? And Marty was saying he's doing great in the minor leagues, but he's 2-3 years away. The guy was like 6'9", a lefty or something that they drafted. Yeah. But I mean, so they, what is the nature? We were talking last night. They go, he says, yeah, you should get the number one pick in the 5th pick in the first round, the 5th pick in the second round, but you really don't, because anybody loses a free agent, there could be 10, 15 picks between the first and second round, right?
Yeah, it depends on what kind of free agent, but yeah, because some of those compensatory picks go down the draft, but yeah, you could be down there. There's plenty of good baseball players. If you're a high-round draft pick, you're expected to make it to the majors, even if you're not a first-round pick. But it's the problem with the White Sox is I think it really started to fall apart when they hired Tony La Russa.
I do, too.
They had the 1 year when they made the playoffs, but if you could, if I think back to some of the interviews with the people involved, they were saying, yeah, it's like, the team is like a bunch of kids who are, just doing whatever they can to get over on the oblivious grandparent, it was, and I think that caught up to him. I think his attitudes, his inability really to lead a group of people of the current generations, really started to make it all unfold. Then they had, they've had terrible injury fortune. Some of that, I got to believe, is self-inflicted. So as an example, I look at Eloy Jimenez. I remember him as a Class A ball player. He was tall. He was lean. He just looked different from everybody else. And by the time he got to the majors, he was all bulked up. It wasn't the same body. And, I think to his detriment. And, there's a reason he kept having all kinds of, his issues weren't broken bones or anything like that. His issues were always pulled muscles, you know, soft tissue types of injuries, you know, that kind of thing. That, you know, the training methods for him, it doesn't look right. So a lot of that is organizational. They don't, you know, they should have a methodology for that that allows people to succeed. And between Moncada, Jimenez, and Luis Robert, the amount of time on the disabled list, or the injured list, now they call it, it has been incredible. And I think, because they are consistently non-surgical types of injuries, I think you have to look at the White Sox and the way they physically develop players.
Well, remember the Hawk, Andre Dawson. Now, Andre Dawson was a great football player in high school, and he hurt his knee. It's a long time ago when they didn't fix knees like they do now. He had a nagging knee problem his entire major league career, and he played in Toronto on artificial turf, and that's one of the reasons why he couldn't wait to get to Chicago, because he could play on grass. But the guy never had an ounce of fat on him. He played at, what, 180, 185, and he was a big guy. Imagine if he would have tried to play at 235, how that knee would have blown up on him over his career.
Yeah, it would have put so much stress on it that there's no way he would have had the career he had.
Let's go to break. Come back. We'll talk more about the what the markets and what's happening. It's all this NVIDIA thing. And if somebody were to hold me down and torture me and say, what's your biggest fears about the market? I look at somehow this Bitcoin and how it's tied into NVIDIA, because the people are buying those servers to do the mining, all the power they're using, all the money they're spending. If that little duopoly seems to fall apart, Kevin, I think the rest of the market's in trouble. I mean,
we can talk about that a little bit.
SP futures down one.
Russell, but I can talk to you about what I'm hearing about local employment.
SP futures down one. NASDAQ futures down 13. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Al. We got Andrew on the board. SP futures down 50 cents. NASDAQ futures down 11. Dow futures are up 4. Dow futures, man, geek out. You had another record yesterday as they snuck up 10 points, like right on the close, and I mean right on the close. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 83.2%, 38,371. Hang Seng down 182, that's a full 1%, 17,692. Shanghai down 11, 28,37. So the Shanghai is, Russell's our China guy, but the mainland China markets do not look very good. Over in Europe, the DAX up 170, it's 0.9%, FTSE down 9.1%. CAC round up 43.6. I'd say bullish. The FTSE is just an outlier over there. Bonds down 2 basis points, 3.81. The Bund down 4 basis points, 2.36. Japan up 1.89. We've got oil down $1.30, back down to the 74.23, where the crisis of last week is over real quick. Brent down 122, 78.33. Natural gas down 2 cents, 187 on the natural gas. It's a good thing I don't trade natural gas. I would never have guessed that with the idea that we have this cold winter with La Nina and stuff, natural gas traders would be disagreeing with me and they'd be kicking my ass. RBOB down 3 cents, 2.20. Sometimes it's better to stay away from those areas you don't know that much about. Gold down $14, ouch, down 25.38. Silver down 50 cents, 29.92. Silver cannot stay above 30. It just absolutely cannot, at least recently. Copper down 8 cents, 4.15. Foreign exchange, the euro is up there at 111. The pound, the dollar is pretty much steady today. But it has sold off, though. The pound is 132. Japan, 144.30 again. It's 144.30 yen to the dollar, where when I give the euro number 111, it's a euro's worth $1.11. So it's flip. It's the opposite flip on that, so when you think about it. Crypto, down 2,059.967. That's a Bitcoin. That's down for under. It was up to 65 pretty recently. Yesterday, Dow was, like I said, up 9.98. S&P up 8. NASDAQ futures up 29. So we keep creeping toward these NVIDIA earnings. We'll see what happens this afternoon. I mean, that's the big number. We have for us traffic, weather, sports. You don't have to worry about the Sox game. Four pitches.
No, we don't. Not today. It is Wednesday, August 28th here in Chicago at 6:41 a.m. Starting off with sports, the Cubs won over the Pirates 9-5, and the Diamondbacks lost to the Mets 3-8. Now, that White Sox versus Rangers game has been delayed into today. It's going to be played at 4:10 later on today. All right, over to Chicago weather, it is currently 72 degrees. We have intervals of clouds, sunshines, and thunderstorms all throughout the day. It's going to be a little bit cooler, but still humid. We're going to have a high of 81. And over in Phoenix, they're currently at 92 degrees. They're going to have a little bit of a blend of sunshine and clouds, possibly some thunderstorms late in the afternoon. They're going to have a high of 106 today. And finally, for Chicago traffic, there are thankfully no major accidents to report. Traffic is building on nearly every inbound expressway, and if you're on the outbound, keep an eye out on the Eisenhower near Central Avenue. And if you're on the inbound, things are getting pretty heavier near the Kennedy Expressway, especially near Lawrence Avenue. That is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
And Kevin, when we talk about a lot of this stuff, a lot of it has to do with your expression, things move along, an inch along, and then suddenly, or is it something like that?
Gradually, then suddenly.
And I just, when you look at, I mean, I guess I'm impressed by what the Fed has been able to do over the last couple of decades in terms of changing this country. I know it was them who made the idea, had the idea, but somebody did. Matter of fact, I'll get it up here, I'll get the exact number. But the money supply was up again the last month. Of course, we don't get it till like it's a four-month delay, so the idea that we don't give anybody any of the numbers anymore is so disgusting to me, I can't even go there. And that's a administration thing. You know, I don't know what their story is with that, but you know, as we go through this, Kevin, it doesn't matter. The more I look at it, it doesn't even matter what the who the administration is. It matters in a lot of ways, and some of the stuff that people worry about. But in terms of some of these ideas, with you look at the medical stuff, you look at the patent stuff, you look at all these kinds of things, it doesn't matter who's in there. You think it should, but it doesn't. I mean. I guess it's kind of disgusting, isn't it, that it's that way? The things that maybe we should really, really care about, neither side does. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say there's no differences. I mean, I think there are. There's a difference in the regulation, and there's differences in some of the stuff that, you know, who they give the money to. But the bottom line for the rest of us, if you're not the rich person having the tax dodge, or you're not the person who's getting the money from the government, the rest of us, we just... The direction is the same way, isn't it? And the direction is down. I mean, get a load of this. The couple of people I was there with last night are people who have, I'll use the term, snuck off to Puerto Rico. Explain to me, Lucy, why people don't pay income taxes in Puerto Rico. It's a U.S. territory. How can you go there and not pay income taxes?
Don't know. I didn't. You know, I've never heard of Puerto Rico as tax haven, but I guess it is.
Huh? Oh yeah, it's the biggest. Guy was telling me last night they've got a big enclave of all these rich people, a lot of Bitcoin people, I guess. It's a gated community like you wouldn't even believe. If you pull up and you're going to go see somebody, of course you got to stop at the gate, but you can't drive in. They drive you in a golf cart. They're going to come and get you, bring you back to your car. What the bleep, Kevin? Is just
and that's just part of the communities, because I don't think the island is that that prosperous. So.
No, but there's this huge group of people that are there for just to evade taxes. And I
sort of like what they in The Godfather, what they were expecting Cuba to become for them, huh?
Yeah. Well, and there's all these number of days you have to spend there versus here and everything else, and you got to keep track, because the IRS will keep track, evidently. And I don't know how you, if your business is here, I don't see how you, if I had, 10 traders on the floor like I used to have, and, my trading firm made the money here, they're going to send me my share down to Puerto Rico, and I don't, when the business is here, I guess you could get away with that, but boy, oh boy. Seems a little weird, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So when are you going to have enough scratch?
Tom, this is, you guys were talking, by the way, speaking of yesterday, just to diverge for a minute.
Speaking of yesterday.
Crosstown traffic was cream. Really?
No, it was,
it was Hendrix.
Jimi Hendrix, yeah.
We're going to take away your rock and roll fan card.
Oh, yeah. I remember the songs, Kevin, like it was yesterday, but I can never put two of them together who did them. I totally lost that memory. You guys still have it, I don't.
Yeah. But you guys were talking some about tax rates, too, and I keep saying this on the air, I absolutely believe tax rate is insignificant. When it comes to corporations especially, it's just an insignificant piece of it. Yeah, the low end, the small businesses can take a lot, but if you really want to do something with the tax code, you have to look at what's deductible and what's not, what can be taken as a business expense and what isn't. And this sort of ties into what you're talking about here with Puerto Rico is once you get your taxable income to zero, go ahead, make it 100% tax. 100% of zero is zero. The rate isn't what matters. It's the deductions that matter.
Kevin, I think most businesses, and we've had this discussion before. And by the way, our referee is no longer with us because Bob could tell us both to shut up because we know what we're talking about. I think most businesses, it's hard to play that game. It really is. I mean,
For the average, smaller business owner, yeah, it's hard to play that game. But for large corporations, which is the ones that the politicians always decry, is the large corporations not paying their, quote, fair share, it's they're good at it.
Well, I don't think if you're... How can I say this? Again, Bob's got to be waking up wherever the hell he is. If you're a multinational place and you've got an IRS that is really pretty good at coming after you or me, but they're probably dumb as a rock compared to these guys, I think you have a real problem with I use the term transfer pricing. For instance, I'll be dumb with this. Take Apple, for instance. Apple has a subsidiary in China that makes the cell phones. Now, of course, they're all over the place, and this is way more complicated than I'm making it. But they have a place in China where they make the cell phones. Now, if you have any kind of divisions, and one person does, I'll make it even simpler. Say, for instance, Pullman has a rail car division, and they have another outfit that stamps parts for everybody, not just Pullman. And Pullman Railcar decides we're going to buy some stuff from those guys. Okay, and it's a separate group. You can overcharge or undercharge for those parts. Now, they're supposed to be fair market value, theoretically, an IRS guy could go in there and say, you guys are pumping up the business in Pullman Parts Mexico because you're paying $15 for this, hunk of steel that's bent and with a hole drilled in it. And the market price here in the U.S. is $10. So if we really want to get into your shorts, we can make this huge court case about how it's you're essentially sending $5 apart from your tax haven in the U.S. to the tax haven in Mexico. I mean, you can do this game. If you're just a regular, and Bob told us a few times on the air, Kevin, that policing transfer pricing is very difficult. Well, Apple is a 65% margin on these phones, allegedly. And how do you know if the phone costs $1,200 if their charge, if their transfer price is, they're getting it from the subsidiary in China for $200 or for $1,100. Oh man, it's $1,100. So okay, their profit here is $100. Well, it could have been $1,100 per phone. But I think a regular business where you are in Elkhart or South Bend or here in Chicago or PTI, we can't play that game. So it's real easy. How much did you bozos take in and how much did you spend? Oh, yeah. Could I throw a couple of company cars on there? Probably. Could I take you out to dinner more than you deserve? Yeah. You know, but that's kind of chump change compared to, you know, transfer pricing like these big guys can do, right?
Yeah. And you know, so I go back to what I say. That these are the ones that are vilified in the political discussions, the ones that can control it, and you know I don't think they're feeling the slightest issue with okay, go ahead, knock yourselves out, go ahead, make our tax rates higher.
Well, the first serpent,
and it's really the small corporations. That take a beating when that happens. They're the people you shouldn't be worried about in the first place, and the ones where you should are getting lower tax bills because they're, you know, their taxable income, they just manage it to become very, very low.
Well, I'll lob this one at you, Kevin, and if you want, use this in class, or never repeat it, whatever you want to think. There's a level at which you can't let You as a government, you as a parent, which you've been and I haven't, there's a level at which you can't let things get to because all of a sudden you becomes a muck time. Let's use a Star Trek episode. When Forest Labs was the first serpent, I'll use the term, to decide to leave the country, and I think, well, I can remember the history of this. Forest Labs was a drug company. I'm sure they've been bought and sold 100 times since then, but they left and headquartered, I think it was in Bermuda, Bahamas, you know, some place near the water. And their shtick was they took their U.S. patents on their drugs and put the patents offshore. U.S. patents. And they essentially, whatever the country was over there, we'll call it Kevin O'Neill Inc., wholly owned subsidiary, they paid Kevin O'Neill Inc. for the use of the patents that were granted here. So they essentially shoved the income offshore and got away with it. And the IRS, I don't know who the hell they greased, I don't know who was president, who was senators at the time, they got away with it. But in the next several years, anybody who wasn't offshore was at a huge competitive disadvantage, and you can't let it get to that stage. I mean, on the trading floor, I'm never going to say that there weren't a few guys that were sleazeballs that bent every rule but it never got to the point where regular people felt they had to cheat to compete. We knew who the sleazebags were, and once in a while they'd get spanked, but basically there were always going to be some few sleazebags, right? But it never got to the point where there was a couple guys who would see an order in the come off in the booth and chase the broker down to the floor. And we knew who these guys, and they were asses, and still are. But now it never got to the point where there are 40 people running after the broker and creating something where people were getting trampled. And it got to the point. I mean, in fact, we, two of our best friends, got in the business of moving banks offshore, right? To the point where if you were any kind of a mid-sized bank, if you didn't have an offshore subsidiary, you couldn't compete. So you can't let it get to the point where some people are not paying taxes and other people are, because guess what? Over a period of 10 years, somebody who's paying 21, 30, even 10% is at a massive disadvantage if somebody's paying nothing. And our people have allowed that to happen. And look what's happened.
And it's not just an ethical issue, even though it is a huge ethical issue. It's not just an ethical issue, it is an issue of what makes a thriving economy. And if you squeeze out the smaller players because of that kind of a competitive advantage or competitive disadvantage, then you're not going to have a thriving economy.
Well, you can't be in a position where if you and I might not even like the idea of having a patents, where if we have a five medical patents and somebody else has five and they're offshore, every time something comes up, they can outbid us because we're paying taxes and they're not. I'm going to say you can't let that happen, and we have. If you're not cheating, you're not trying in a lot of these areas, which is, and tax is one of them, right?
Absolutely.
Well, you can't have that because look what's happened.
And from an ethical standpoint, do you know anybody that says, "Oh no, I should never try and get over on the IRS"?
Well,
you got people who won't do it out of fear, but most people think, "Hey, if I get away with it, the IRS deserves it."
But
so that's part of what we've undermined in our society is we've undermined confidence and respect. For the entities who are involved, who are supposed to be doing enforcement.
Well, the only thing that made the income tax law work was withholding, right? If they withhold your money, nobody'd be able to send them the check, right? They get it first. It's up to you to get it back out of them. But, I mean, it's a question of degree, Kevin. I use this example all the time. And, in World War II, I'm not naive or dumb enough, I hope, to think that the guy who's making the PT boat motors in Buffalo, New York, didn't find a way to charge 5% more than he should have. But there's a level of graft, as my uncle used to say, the corruption is at a level that people can deal with. There's never going to be none when you're talking human nature. But now, 5%, and the guy used the 5% extra, maybe to give a bonus to his people, maybe to spend it at the local saloon, whatever he did, it never got out of the neighborhood. It was, so what? I mean, I'm not saying that he's a saint for stealing the 5%. I'm not going to say that, but it wasn't 30%. It wasn't 40%. I mean, if you and I, say you got one of your buddies as an attorney, which you do have a few of their attorneys, and you go out to dinner and you charge it and you say, we talked about my taxes or some crap, when in fact you talked about Notre Dame football, and it's $50. Kevin, I don't care. I do care, I guess, but because everybody does a little bit. But if everybody slips 4% on the IRS, you know what? It's just people being people. It's not the same as somebody offshore paying zero and some company equal here is paying, $5 million a year or something. It's not even close. Just saying. One is very orchestrated and one's just people being people. But you know what? I mean, I don't mess around with my taxes very much. But if you ever talk me into buying you dinner, I don't know, you might be a potential client. Who knows? Why not? Because guess what? You might be, actually. Right? So, I mean, it's...
Well, I'll pay you back cash for pre-tax money.
Okay.
Or post-tax money.
No, I'm getting close. I don't take cash. If we bet $20 on the Bears and I win, you got to give me your credit card.
Yeah, so if you don't want to be tracked, you're going to have to start buying yourself some prepaid cards.
Why don't these younger people or other people, even an older guy I was talking to last night, why don't people realize that if you lose your cash, you lose a big chunk of your freedom?
Yeah, now theoretically, it requires a subpoena.
Oh, come on.
Well, no, I said theoretically, yeah. Right? But then we've talked about CTR reporting and the $10,000 limit and aggregating that and all of the things that are involved in that, which tell you that it doesn't. And then there's we talk about economic stuff that nobody discusses in the political realm. Nobody discusses privacy in the political realm, and I think it's one of the hugest issues of our day.
The email that I just had to give Ticketmaster, who I could give a rat's behind about, you wouldn't take the bet. I'll bet you an adult beverage that somewhere in the next 3 days I get something from Ticketmaster, my email address.
Yeah, you probably will. So, yeah, and what you hear all the time from people in government is, hey, we're not reading your text messages. We're just capturing the metadata.
Yeah.
Well, what's metadata? It's just data about your text message. So if I have the date, time, sending phone number, receiving phone number, length of the message, and whatever else I can discern as metadata information, I know a hell of a lot about you. I know, especially when you get into consistent exchanges of messages and things like that. Same thing on voicemails or just phone calls in general. What do you know? What would you know about me if I got a call like every Tuesday from a psychiatrist's office?
I'd say you finally woke up and knew you had a problem.
I finally realized my troubles, but what it would tell you that I'm probably getting a reminder call.
Yeah.
Because every doctor gives you a reminder call, so I'm probably getting a reminder call about an appointment on Wednesday or Thursday, and that's all fine, getting the reminder call and all. But whose business is it to know that I'm seeing a psychiatrist? Well, we know the government, because they totally admit to it, is capturing the metadata for that phone call. So now they know. And you could create all kinds of scenarios around that that tie to that. Privacy is a huge issue, and nobody talks about it. I mean, the only political person I've ever heard talking about it in any significant way is Rand Paul.
Yeah, but Kevin, you can't, for some reason, I've given up sort of trying to, I'll use the term talk sense into people, because in my definition of sense might not be theirs, but the little cadre of guys that once or twice a week we stop for an adult beverage and we're all in the industry. At the table, two of the people have been hacked in the last year, where stuff has been yanked out of their bank accounts. And one guy, I think you were correct, I asked you about it, and you said his phone has been hacked because he has, Zembo, Bimbo, whatever different groups are.
Venmo or something like that.
Yeah, so they all took money out of his bank account. Now, the bank was able to wrestle most of it back. I think he ended up getting all of it back. But it was a two-week ordeal. And another one who actually helps out with the show tried to get in his bank account last week, and all of a sudden it's zero. So the bank noticed somebody coming in from somewhere, essentially took all his money out of his bank account and put it in a dummy account so nobody could do it until he found out about it, and then somehow or another they gave him a different number or whatever the deal was. There's two people, Kevin, in my group in the last 6 months that have had, I'll use a privacy event. Tonight, if I told the one guy, how about if I Zembo you some money? He'll say, fine. Yeah, the idea that they would stop what they're doing never even crosses their mind. Never even crosses their mind. I mean, how do you...
We give up our information voluntarily.
Yeah, and I'm sure Andrew's got back from the Dunkin' Donuts. He got us some coffee. I'll bet he was the only person over there. I'm surprised. I gave him $20. Usually he comes back, says, where's your credit card? They don't have any change. How do you not have change for a $20 bill in a Dunkin' Donut? I'll bet every nine people in a row are going to use the credit cards. I go to my guys are over doing work. I go to the Chick-fil-A. There's only one of the cashiers that takes cash. I mean, and yet there's all, why make it a problem? I don't get it. I mean, just saying.
Well, I know what the vendors are doing. They, handling cash is expensive. It's much easier for them to do it electronically. So, yeah.
But don't they pay a fee though?
Pardon?
Don't they pay a fee?
Oh yeah, but you look at the operating cost of counting, sorting cash, getting it to the bank for deposit, all the things that go in there. And if you're paying a percent and a half on the transaction, then it's just a math exercise as to which one is most beneficial. And remember, the math exercise is not just the hours in counting it; it's actually a headcount issue. So you reduce your headcount, and that just having people on your staff comes with a certain number of expenses that just from having them, let alone what you're paying them. So. Yeah, that's all part of the equation. That's from their standpoint, they just run the math and say, "Yep, we're going cashless."
Well,
it used to be that you had to go the other way, that you had to accept cash, and that isn't the case anymore.
Well, on the south side, places that Odd and I frequent on usually Saturday night, virtually all of them now have gone for a 3% discount to cash, because on the south side, people maybe aren't doing as well. And on the north side, places are going no cash. So
it depends on their rate from their credit card processor. Some of them get better rates than others. It's based on volume. It's based on credit ratings. All kinds of stuff that goes into it, into the calculation. But yeah, there are some out there that are paying 3% off the top, and there's some that are paying, you know, 1%. It just depends on the situation.
Well, it might be some that when they go in the morning to buy the produce want to pay cash there too. Gee, why would they want to do that, Kevin? Just saying. Little something going on off the books. And this one bartender guy, they had this big deal with the Russell on here in a second. I'm not telling people how to evade taxes, but the guy's up by Wrigley Field. If you're not greedy, Kevin, everybody can spiff a little, right? I'm not advocating it. If you ever walk into a bar on a real busy day, like, you know, Cubs are in town or something like that, or, St. Louis in town, you're probably not going to mess with the hard booze and the stuff behind the bar because, you know, the IRS is pretty good at you bought, you know, how many bottles of booze you should get, how many drinks per bottle, and blah, blah, blah. The state's pretty good at it, probably not the IRS. But the one thing you can do is get yourself some attractive person, go to Sam's Club and buy, like, 10 cases of beer, and in the corner, they have a big thing of ice, put the beer in there, have some lovely young lady there selling beers for $6 a throw or something that you just paid 50 cents for, and she only takes cash. You get away with that. Easy.
All right, I'm setting up tomorrow.
Yeah, you're not going to be the good-looking young girl, just saying.
Hey, I can bat an eye with the best of them.
Oh, God.
All right, well, you got to go to Russell.
Yeah, we got to go to Russell. Anything you want me to ask Russell?
I do want to talk on Friday then a little bit about the state of the side hustle economy.
Oh, yeah. We also want to talk a little bit about
interesting conversations this week, so I'll share that with you on Friday.
We also got to talk a little bit about as we're opening the season, the NIL stuff. Who was the game after the Georgia Tech Florida State? It was two lesser teams, Florida something something and somebody, and then one team had 28 new players in the portal, and they're mid college, Kevin. We'll talk a little bit about how that's going down. Anything you want me to ask Russell?
Yeah, I want to ask him if he's having a good day, and otherwise I'll sign out and let you guys know. I'll see you on Friday.
Well, there he is. He's answering already.
I'm having a wonderful day. I'm surrounded by dogs. That's all that matters because they're better than people.
I'm with you. All right. Well, you guys have a good show segment, and I'll be listening.
I'm going to say the dogs were not happy with the weather yesterday, 98 degrees.
No, they wouldn't even set foot outside, and then – you know, the thunderstorm scared the crap out of them.
Yeah, you know, I was telling Kevin,
and of course the biggest one hid under a blanket because she's, you know, the biggest one's the babiest one.
Oh, God. Okay. Russell, I drove into the parking lot at Sox Park yesterday, 6:00, not a cloud in the sky. By the way, some of your buddies were there last night.
I'm sure they were.
Marty O'Connell, Dick Belden, Ed Sylvester, remember him?
I do not remember that name.
He was a trader. He's been a place in Michigan City. He was a big-time sailor dude. David Schloss.
Oh, I know. I actually know who you're talking about.
Is it David Schloss or something? He was he was muckety-mucking one of the places at one time. Is it David Schloss or I don't know, whatever. But there was people there that you would have known. Anyway.
Was that the FIA outing?
No, it was Marty's 80th birthday.
Oh, okay. Oh,
So I pull up and... of course, all the windows are closed at the skybox because it's hotter than hinges of hell, right? So
yeah.
We're in there. We're BS and everybody's getting, you know, hey, what have you done the last 10 years? You know, one of those kinds of discussions. Oh, let's see. Yeah. Let's see. 2015, no, that wasn't a good year. 2016, no, that was better. I mean, you know, whatever, those kinds of discussions. And all of a sudden, the players run out in the field and they go, hey, it's pouring. The weather report was at 6:00, well, there was a thunderstorm out by Huntley or someplace. Might come this way, who knows? And all of a sudden, an hour later, the place is pouring. They do four pitches, they run the tarp out there, and that was the end of it. Poured for another 2 hours. They said that's it. Playing today. So it can't. Oh, did you guys? Sure. I mean, there was like no warning to that thing last night.
No, they just popped up out of nowhere. So I do think the climate's changing. I don't think we're causing it, and. Because, you know, I grew up about 500 miles south of here and of Chicago. And every day you'd get these pop-up thunderstorms, you know, in July and August. And you never knew where they were going to come from. Of course, you know, we didn't have quite the technology, so they were more of a surprise. But that's the kind of, I mean, you'd look at a radar And 30 minutes later, all of a sudden, there's a thunderstorm when there was nothing sitting there.
Yep.
And I do think that there's something going on with the climate where the type of that kind of stuff that was almost a daily occurrence in July and August when I was growing up in the South are starting to happen up here.
Well, I mean, but now the record we broke yesterday was set in 1973, and I remember it very well because I was doing orientation at Notre Dame, being an RA, and I was in an unair-conditioned dorm in a room about the size of his desk with a window and a transom, and I was dying. But the hottest July ever is still, what, 1955, when nobody had air conditioning and nobody even had ceiling fans. I mean, it's you know, when they say, oh, global warming's causing all this, and we're...
Well,
we're,
I don't think it's causing it, yeah. But I do think... I do think some things have changed climate-wise.
For some reason, yeah. And I don't know why. Actually, there was a... You know, I'm not a slave to it, but this Quora Digest... if something is an interesting topic, you know me, I can't stop... I can't not read it, right?
Right.
Some guy went through this whole weather thing since, like, the year zero, or the year 1000, when people, you could get some kind of track on it. And there's been a bunch of periods where things were colder.
Colder and warmer. I didn't say that I thought, I just said that I do believe that the climate, that some things have been changing, because, you brought up the pop-up thunderstorm.
Yeah.
I'd be a kid, I'd go on a bike ride, and, it was a clear day, and then all of a sudden, I make it home in the middle of a thunderstorm on my bike, and my mom's left three towels out in the garage, which is a signal to do not come in this house.
Yep.
Until you. So I would just recall that happening more than once, and that's the kind of thing that yesterday was reminding me of.
Well, we had just that.
Because that was a lot more common. So that's all.
But what do you mean? Some of the stuff I agree, but you can't be. I keep complain about this generation. Mm-hmm. I can't go to a ball game and see a guy make a nice catch and immediately say it's the greatest catch anybody ever made.
Exactly. That seems to be a phenomenon. You've got such a narrow window of perspective.
But I sort of will say this. For whatever reason, years ago, I don't know, one of my buddies worked for NOAA, right? And he just retired from there.
Uh-huh.
Real nice guy, and probably the smartest guy. I mean, at school, he was the smartest guy among us for sure. He ended up with his master's at Ohio State and his PhD in chemistry at Rhode Island. And pretty much had a whole career at NOAA. He was in the DC-8 flights over the ozone holes, and then when they did the full...
Oh, cool.
And then when they did the full worldwide, essentially inventory of oxygen versus carbon dioxide. And they basically disproved a lot of stuff. I mean, people would say, the Amazon, we get all our oxygen from the Amazon. And he goes, that's total BS. The Amazon is in equilibrium. For every tree that's pumping out oxygen, there's 9 zillion termites eating the dead trees, pumping out carbon dioxide. It's where new growth, like new Yellowstone, after all the fires, because the next year, the oxygen meter damn near broke when they flew over it. Anyway, so he's got me, I get more interest in it than most people. And I've been watching this, since I don't know much of the other stuff, the El Nino versus La Nina. And we've had this really strong El Nino for like 2 or 3 years, which is warming of the water in the Central Pacific off the coast of South America. Now, it goes hot for a while. Well, there was a pretty severe El Nino, and that's one of the reasons why last year we had like 3 cold days all winter, right, and hardly no snow, was because of that. And people were wondering, is this ever going to change? Well, it is changing to La Nina more rapidly than anybody has ever seen or heard. And they've been doing this for like 100 years. The rapidity of it, it always does change one to the other, always has. It's never changed this rapidly. Now, what do you suppose causes that to happen that quickly? I mean, it's always happened gradually. You go from one to the other, and La Nina, that's why I was saying earlier, if you looked at this stuff, you would probably be buying natural gas futures because you would think it's going to be a cold winter, yet they're getting destroyed. They're under $2 again. So, I mean, So much for my weather prognostication about natural gas, Russell. I wouldn't take my advice on that. I think it should be going up. It's getting hammered. So thank God I don't have a position for me or my clients. But, I mean, you never know with this stuff. You're right. I mean,
I think there's a lot more to it than anybody.
Well, I would agree.
And I think, and what I really find kind of funny is, do we really think that we are so freaking important that everything that we do is damaging the planet, and that the planet, you know, isn't big enough and dynamic enough to push back on us when it needs to?
Well, we're getting more and more people. I will say this: when you get some poor shark lands on the shore, he's dead. He's got 15 plastic bags in his stomach. I'm going to say it's probably us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if your poor dog eats a sack, guess what? It's your sack, right?
Yeah. So that dog doesn't need the sock. The dog has been, it's just, I giggle because the dog has been procuring and hiding socks.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so, they can.
Yeah.
Some dogs are really into that. I know.
She's going to make, the one that's up for adoption, she's going to make a family a really just a memorable dog. She's got all kinds of personality and no bad personality, other than she's now a sock fairy and has been stealing people's socks.
Well, it could be worse. It could be like Audrey's poodle takes the insoles out of your shoes, or she did, and without wrecking them.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I don't know how you do that. I mean, how you do that. Anyway, the questions for you are, China can't seem to get out of it. So why doesn't it go up and down with Aung San anymore? Just a list of questions. The rumor this morning is they're going to somehow embrace Bitcoin as a way to get themselves out of their monetary problems.
They're the only country in the world that owns more Bitcoin than the United States already. So that's not a solution to anything.
I'm going to go through my list of big worries here.
Yeah.
Bitcoin's one of them.
Well, I want to skip to the one that I'll bet you're not going to bring up that's going to make your mind explode.
I need one more of those. Yes, give me that one.
Okay. Carry trade. And I'm not talking about Japan. The new carry trade is borrowing money in China and lending it in other emerging markets because the interest rate's so low in China compared to everywhere else.
All right, you got to start from the beginning on this one. I think Russell Chief Inc., if we were a big firm here, we could find a way to borrow. If we had a Japanese subsidiary, in a banking relationship, we could find a way to borrow Japanese yen and flip it into dollars. How the hell could we get a loan in China?
Well, that's the deal. You could deposit money into a bank in China that pays an interest rate, and then
are we talking Hong Kong or China?
I'm talking the yuan, the Chinese yuan. I'm not talking about Hong Kong dollars.
So I could walk into Shanghai and open up an account. I thought I couldn't.
I don't know. I don't know if if you or I were to do that, if we were to like open a bank account and deposit some money in China, or take out a loan, which is what we would need to do for this carry trade, because you're borrowing in China and then you're taking that money and you are depositing it in a higher yielding currency and making money off of the differential, excluding the currency exchange rate.
Right.
But my point on that one is that's, you know, what's to stop China from suddenly demanding, and I say China because every company in China that has more than 50 employees has to have a representative of the Chinese Communist Party employed there to make sure that party ideology is being followed. So, you know, what's to stop one of those banks from saying we want our loan back now, or jacking the interest rate on it, or anything else, because they just arbitrarily they arbitrarily will change rules if they're not benefiting them. And my concern on a carry trade in China is that, you know, they suddenly demand their money back.
or they change the rate on you, or they just change the rules on you, because you know, anything that you do within the financial markets, you've got a belief that the rules are going to stay the same from day to day.
Well,
there might be people that skimp on those rules, as you were saying in the first hour, et cetera. But China, you know, if their stock market were down 8% today, they'd close the freaking market, or they'd outlaw selling, or they. So the when you say what's wrong with China, and you say they can't get out of their own way, it's that they're not getting out of their own way because the government keeps trying to do things to, for lack of a better way to say it, help.
Right, so if we're able to pull this off,
the fact that financial institutions would be willing to put on a big leverage that involves dealing with China, it just makes my head spin.
All right, so suppose we get some bank over there to say, okay, we'll lend you two idiots, you know, a million yuans or something. The yuans, right?
Yeah, Chinese yuan. Yeah.
So. Where do we get debt
and it's
per
like
dollar?
And it's like a nightmare to get capital out of that country. You know, so if you are were able to do that, you know, do that part, you're asking me operationally about how you would do it with the yen. I you know, and I can figure that one out. And you know, Japanese banks are going to look at a very large financial institution in the U.S. and realize they're low risk and that they're going to get paid back, and they would be willing to lend the money in that case, at a pretty low rate. I don't think, I just don't think that there's always a level playing field with China, and I don't trust them as far as I could throw them.
Well, if you and I have yen in the...
Japan is a nice, developed financial economy with decent regulations that you can rely on. China's the freaking Wild West and at the whims of one guy.
But I mean, if you and I have $1 million,
so people touting that carry trade, I think it's just as bad as, you know, telling people they should put money into China right now, because when you deal with them, it's going to be restrictive enough that something bad's going to happen. That's all predict it.
I don't know why I'm always interested in the mechanism in this, and I know I'm beating you up on this, but...
Well, because it's what you've done for, you know, a good portion of your career.
Well, because when people say...
And you deal with it.
Well,
so that's why.
Well, because people say, how about if I just buy this stock? Well, I know what has to happen for PTI to buy the stock and get it to you. The detail is...
Yeah.
It's not just the detail, but... I mean, if you and I got a million bucks worth of yen in Japan... It's real easy to say, flip that to my account at Continental, but not much money. It's a Citigroup here. But how the hell do you get that from China to here?
I don't know. I would be very concerned about that part right there. You know, and I would be very concerned about dealing with them business wise on anything.
Does that usually go through Hong Kong, or was that Hong Kong's lot in life for a long time?
I think it was kind of their lot in life, but they really wanted those types of things to go through Shanghai.
Okay.
You know, that's their financial capital.
Where they could close off.
When I would go over and speak to financial institutions on behalf of SIBO, because they thought that at some point we would generate a whole lot of volume from China, which I don't think has ever come to fruition, and that is not a criticism of SIBO. Because I would talk to people in management about it, and they're like, we know it's the long game with these guys, and we feel like if they start to learn options, people in China will start to trade our options as well. Well, the Chinese regulators make it very difficult for people to get capital out of China and open up a U.S. brokerage account, so that one kind of fell apart.
Well, you know, remember you remember Billy McGowan?
Uh huh.
And Billy, unfortunately, passed young. He was I know Billy from wherever. He was the broker I stood next to and the CBOE and the OEX on the old floor. I mean, that's how old that was. So Billy and I have been friends, you know, pretty much forever. And he was our guy over at IB. And people find us. Somebody says, I have a group over in China that's trying to put together a electronic trading firm, and they want a firm over here, and you guys have a good reputation, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, I don't think I can do this. So I go over, and I see Billy, and he goes, oh, yeah. He's with IB. He goes, we have a place over there. If you want to set up a PTI Hong Kong. Just give me the high sign. You'll have a post office box, or for lack of a better term, in our building in Hong Kong. And if anybody wants to send orders in through there, it'll be to the PTI spot in IB, and they can, you know, as long as, because the problem is them signing up in China and being able to get to Hong Kong, but that's on them. Because if somebody wants to come through PTI Hong Kong, we'll let you know how much money you made every day. We didn't have to do anything. And I'm like going,
you
got to be kidding me.
No, I did some presentations and stuff when I would do my Far East thing for SIBO every year when I was in Hong Kong. So I know what you're talking about there. Like, Interactive Brokers would not directly have a Hong Kong, they wouldn't have a Hong Kong presence, but they'd have like a joint venture or something that. And it would look very similar to, similar to what it looked like for, Interactive Broker clients in the U.S.
Somehow the people in the mainland had to be able to get to China. That was on them. I mean, how to get to Hong Kong.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And you're talking about before, not necessarily before the handover, but before China just took full control of everything that goes on.
It's 10 years ago. It's 10 years ago, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's back when I was going back and forth, and I could from year to year see the encroachment of China in Hong Kong.
Yeah,
you can just see it. They do it gradually. They do everything gradually, which is a smart way to do. You know, the whole turn up the heat and the frog doesn't realize that the water's starting to boil around them. Things gradually, but when you go there once a year, that kind of like the nephew you see at Christmas every year. You could just pick up on the change a lot better, but I found it really funny that I see it. I guess I just automatically find it in not haha funny, but inquisitively interesting whenever you see the financial press talking about the new hot trade is anything that involves China, unless it's just being short China.
Well, the is. These countries seem to have, and I'll use ours as an example. I mean, I should know more, but I don't know chapter and verse of deficits and so forth over in Europe, and I have no idea. Well, I have a pretty good idea, I suspect. I have a suspicion, not an idea, of what the European Central Bank balance sheet must look like in terms of profit and loss. Someplace here, we have, two people running for president, and I don't care. If you and I or your nice dog ran for president, the numbers don't change. I mean, we're in trouble numbers wise, and I got to believe China and Japan are way worse than we are. But Japan is, their debt is two times their GDP. They're not producing as many kids, so shoving it off to the next generation is probably not a mathematical identity you want to look at, right? So everybody is like grasping at straws. And the one this morning, China seems like they're gonna do something. I don't know how you embrace Bitcoin, embrace an artificial stock.
They already do.
Yeah.
That was my point immediately. Was I saw a list of the 10 biggest holders of Bitcoin, and the U.S. government and the Chinese government it's the Communist Party of China, and I just think about. Bitcoin is supposed to be the bastion of all kinds of freedom, and one of the 10 biggest holders of Bitcoin in the world is the Chinese Communist Party.
I don't trust. I don't see how.
Just imagine if Russia, if we backtrack, 50, 60 years, and we find out the Soviet Union is one of the biggest holders of some sort of cryptocurrency.
Well,
we'd outlaw it.
Yeah, they were the biggest holders of $100 bills and were pretty much outlawing those, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we did. Well, they probably were one of the biggest holders of the $1,000 bills before we got rid of them.
Yeah. I just, whenever people start having these sort of, here's my, and it won't be this. What are dangers to this economy where, we make new records every day damn near and everything just keeps going up, up, up in every stack. And I got Costco, and I'm not a member of Costco. I think they run on the. I tell you what, they seem to treat their employees better than anybody else. They're always happy.
Oh, they do.
And I love the company. I can't come near any retailer with a 55 PE, Russell. I mean, it's just I can't go there. I mean, I know maybe it's my length of years in the business, but retailers at 20 is a push, isn't it? Usually,
you would think.
But anyway,
unless they're getting ready to get bought out.
But I look at how the Bitcoin is somehow tied in with everybody's favorite stock here, which is NVIDIA, because a lot of the stuff they sell is for mining that stuff, and a lot of the energy consumption in some of these places is for that stuff. Now, yeah. I mean, there's now 172,000 Bitcoin millionaires, up from 80,000 like 8 months ago or something. Mm-hmm. So somehow or another, if this thing were to turn out to be a house of cards, which I'm not hoping for, they got a problem. If they got a problem, all those people that own it and think they're wealthy, they got a problem. Bitcoin, which spends, or not, NVIDIA, which sells a lot of stuff to those guys, and it just makes me nervous. Yesterday I read it, Microsoft's 19% of their purchases, one company. That's danger, Will Robinson. And Pullman Freight got to the point where ITEL was like 80% of our backlog, and one day ITEL was out of business. The next year,
that's an issue.
Next year, Pullman Freight was out of business. Duh. I mean, I'm saying my job is to look around for, holes in the path, right? Because that's what I do for people. That's when they give me money, they say, I'm going to go to work and be a surgeon. You watch this stuff for me. And that's what I do. And so it's easy to say everything's, a lot of the other firms, by the way, that seem to do, just seem to grow a lot faster. Don't worry, everything's going up. Give me your money. I'll put it in the market, and I'll sit back and play golf all year, and you pay me 1.5%, and everybody's happy. Well, everybody's happy when it goes up, which it has for a long time. They're not happy the other way. I have a lot of people just playing along, and that's fine. If that's what you want to do, we do that too. But the idea is to look for pitfalls. And right now, these prices, these concentrations, this kind of weird stuff like Bitcoin, I see those as potential bombs, not... And obviously they haven't been for somebody who owned Bitcoin, but I look at it and say, what could go wrong here, right? And that looks to me like it could. Now, whether it's a 10% chance, 5%, 1%, that I couldn't tell you, but it just seems kind of weird that something is trading for $60,000. Nobody can even say what the something is. Just saying.
Well, it's... I got into a big... You gotta love when you do media appearances and you're never invited back. And I had one. It was NPR in Indiana, like the local Indiana, and they had three professors on to talk about crypto. And the two guys I was on with, I don't even remember what schools they were with. They were with Indiana schools, and they were repeating the talking points. It's going to be a great medium exchange. It's so much cheaper. And this is just a couple of years ago where I feel like those arguments had already gone away. It's going to be a great medium exchange because of scarcity. It's going to behave like this was before we got the inflation bout, too. So they were talking about how it'd be an inflation hedge. And then I went through my little story where I went on a roadshow for Bitcoin. And over the 3 week period of the roadshow, the use changed from medium of exchange because everybody started to realize that Ethereum would work better than Bitcoin to storage of value to potential inflation hedge. It was a terrible inflation hedge. It was, yeah. And I said, basically Bitcoin and the rise in Bitcoin is based on the greater fool theory. I used an academic theory because it's an academic panel. I said greater fool theory. I said it's basically you got, and part of this is based on what listening to undergrads talk about crypto, but people are buying Bitcoin because it's going up, not because they believe in some sort of long term utility that's going to be for the greater good.
It's going up, so the other people must be right.
Right. Well, and it's going up, and you're like, look at how much money people. So when, we used to call it the greater fool theory, and now it's called the fear of missing out, the FOMO. It's the exact same thing, though. And actually, I just put that together in my head. It's the exact same thing that we used to talk about academically in greater fool theory. We just call it fear of missing out now, and that's what all this crypto stuff is based on. It's based on that, and then it's based on... Now I'm just going to sound like the grumpiest old guy ever. And it's based on seeing, you know, people that claim to have made an awful lot of money in Bitcoin, you know, sitting next to with a picture of them next to a Ferrari, or I don't know if you know this. Did you know that there's a service that you can go out there and they will take pictures of you on a private plane, even if you never fly on it? So you've got people that are claiming that they're, you know, making a fortune in Bitcoin that look like they're flying private. They probably hired a model, and they also take pictures of themselves next to really expensive cars when they're not really making anything. So you're asking, what is the whole Bitcoin thing based on? It's based on people wanting to be that guy, even though that guy's fake.
I got a good one for you here, Russell. I call it panic to be afraid to sell at a profit lest an additional profit be lost. The panic which keeps people at roulette tables, the insidious propaganda against quitting a winner, the fear of being taunted by those who held on, all worked together. It came not only a port of pride, but a civic duty not to sell as if there was ever a buyer without a seller. This is the guy in front of Congress after the 29 crash.
Oh, I thought it was Livermore. I swear to God, I thought you were reading directly from Reminiscence of a Stock Operator.
Liberal journalist.
I really did. I thought you were reading directly from that book. Because that sounded like it just sounded just like it.
Liberal back then meant different stuff. Gilbert Seldes in the final days before the crash, because were the true time of panic because people would not sell, and people couldn't borrow enough to keep it going. I had no idea when all those firms went under during the 29 crash. It's certainly not a course. But if you could put together, or somebody could, maybe I could, maybe an hour lecture, maybe two of them, on the 29 crash, it is absolutely educational.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't realize that when banks refused to lend any more in terms of margin, and the margin numbers got to be like 15%, that your companies like GMG all piled in. That's why a lot of them got clobbered in the crash, not because their stock went down, because they were holding the margin notes. I'd never dreamed of that. I mean, until I read this book. I'm like, I why would anybody think that happened?
Well, there are a lot more rules in place that keep that from happening.
Well, I was with a couple of guys last night. They're in Puerto Rico evading the taxes, right?
And evidently, I know who those guys are.
Oh yeah. Well, evidently there's a big Bitcoin gang down there, you know, because obviously they haven't sold their Bitcoin, so they're all, you know, it's great. Why should it go down? I go, well, why should it go up? What is it? you wonder, you know, what is the flux point? I mean, to this day, I can't tell you why. The market changed in August of 82, and not a week before or a week after. I mean, I read all the stuff on the 29 crash. I don't know why it happened in October and not September, November. I mean, well, all of a sudden, something just happened. I mean, the 87 crash. I mean, if it would have happened on Thursday, I would never have had to trade again instead of having a real problem on Friday, and it was a life-changing experience. It was a matter of a day. Actually, if it happened on Friday, I would have been fine because I had a gazillion puts. It all expired that night, and I was not able to roll the puts that were expiring onto Monday, which I'd never not been able to do before. And all of a sudden, the thing was so panicky the last 2 hours, I couldn't get that spread off.
I've heard the OEX options blamed for part of it. Do you think the fact that it was expiration weekend had something to do with it as well?
Well, for me, it did.
I just never thought about
it.
I mean,
for sure.
I've never heard that part of it, which it doesn't mean that it hadn't been said before. I just hadn't heard that part.
For me, I would say that was 99% of the issue.
Huh.
I was short 500 puts on Monday morning. On Friday afternoon, I probably was long 2,000 puts.
Goodness.
Yeah, and I made a lot of money on them, but not enough to cover the Monday.
Yeah.
I mean, all I had to do was a 200-300 lot spread, and I've never not been able to do that. The pit was so liquid.
You just couldn't get a pit, yeah.
I couldn't find a November put to save my life. And there was a 600 lot in the book The only thing that was there, and finally I said, it was like $2 away, but I needed it. I went to get it, and somebody got it a millisecond ahead of me, and I'm going to say that was a $9 million trade. Which nobody... Plus, you know,
timing is everything, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but the weird part was
laugh at it, but it's a long enough in the history that I can laugh a little bit at that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I ended up being a learning experience, but here's the weird part is, Russell, is you never know when things get panicky. That's why when people, I mean, the other day I heard some guy going, look at this little crash we had a week ago on the carry trade, goes to show everybody that. Whenever the market goes down, you got to buy it because it always comes back up. I mean, don't time this thing. Don't try and sell when it's going down. But here's the weird part of it. Everybody talks about Black Monday, the crash on Monday. As usual, that's only part of the story. We were down 100 points on, like, Wednesday night, all right? And we were down another 100 and some on Thursday night. And then we got clobbered again on Friday. And I'm going to say we were down, what, 22%? Or 20% on Monday, but we were already down, out of memory, I'm going to say 10, 12%. And you sit there and go, all right, now you listen to all the buffoons today telling you to just buy the dip. Well, I went back that weekend because I was nervous as hell, and I'm sitting there going, okay, Eisenhower's heart attack was, an 8% move? The crash of 29 was only 10 or 15%. The Kennedy assassination was like 6%. Reagan getting shot was like 5. So I'm sitting there going, Ernie, we're down 10-12%. How much worse can it get? Duh. So the idea that a market is down, 2% like it was a week ago Monday, and you're an absolute moron to be afraid and maybe I'm not saying you sell or whatever, obviously you should have bought that day.
Yeah.
To tell somebody, don't worry about it, always comes back. I'll tell you what, I'm facing the mirror that says it doesn't always come back. I mean, always is a long time. It all takes is once. Just saying.
Yeah.
So. Hey, let's go for a really quick break, Russell. SP Futures down 3. I want you to tell me all about NVIDIA earnings. I got about like 7, I'll go over, I'll get the number. I think it's like $15. Is a straddle. NASDAQ down 10. We have a real quick break. Be right back. Abercrombie and Fitch, they had earnings last night. And last night the straddle was... 17, it's like $22. Their straddle was like 15% at some of these retailers. But NVIDIA,
yeah, nobody's got a clue on retail because everybody thought when Walmart reported and it was really good that they were taken away from the higher end retailers, and then Target had really good numbers. So now everybody's completely clueless.
Well, yeah, some of them...
Really, that's what's going on with retail in general, is everybody's a bit, scratching their head because generally Walmart will benefit because people that don't shop at Walmart all the time suddenly start showing up when they're becoming a bit more budget conscious. And I've been that person. I've gone through where I've worked with a hedge fund. We blew up, and all of a sudden I'm on a budget with a pregnant wife and a 2-year-old at home. I'm trying to figure out the cheapest place to get my Diet Cokes and Pop Tarts.
And you got a couple of Frenchies to feed.
Yeah, back then it was we switched from being a pug to a Frenchie family.
When I moved into my neighborhood. Pugs were huge, and so for a while, for like 2 or 3 years, the Puggles were huge. Remember those?
Yeah, and now Frenchies are huge. It's not just we're just freaking trend followers.
Oh yeah. Well, anyway, the 28 straddle.
No, sorry, the Rhodes family are trendsetters. Excuse me.
Oh, you're trendsetters.
Yeah, that's really sad.
Well, the 28.
the trendsetters.
I've got the NVIDIA straddle tonight at $15. So that's the stock's 128. So that's what 13%? That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, the average move off of it's around 8% or so. But they, goodness gracious, the last two quarters, they've, I think they rallied just under 10% and a bit over 10%. I'd be worried about NVIDIA because I'm hearing of people reselling, I think people loaded up on NVIDIA chips afraid that they wouldn't be able to get them at some point in the future. And now there might be a backlog that catches up with them.
I don't know if
you see what I'm saying. What I'm saying around that one, I just they've been selling everything if they could, and there was a little bit of controversy around it, but all you have to say is Elon Musk, and everybody gets upset now. He took some NVIDIA chips that were supposed to be for Tesla, and basically sold them to Twitter. They moved him from one place to another.
Well, he did. That's right, he did. Yeah. I'm sure. I remember, which
makes me think, well, that means that he had loaded up on NVIDIA chips that he didn't necessarily need immediately, just to make sure he had access to them. And if other people have that mentality, don't you think that they probably, that there's a bunch sitting on a shelf that aren't needed, so you're probably not wanting to put more on the shelf right now?
Well, we had... there's been a few. I don't know if I sent them to you. I probably didn't because I didn't want to mess with your head. Because some dude has a podcast out there, and I'm sure you have it buried. And he takes it top to bottom on who's in the backlog at NVIDIA, and some guy who was part of the, according to this guy anyway. Again, this is all total rumor because I'm not short the thing. I don't have a position in there. A lot of clients that do, and you know, some are protected, some aren't. He took it from like soup to nuts that somebody was kind of orchestrating the backlog, the order backlog, and was finding ways to lend people money to essentially get a place in the backlog. And some of the money was coming from NVIDIA, so they were essentially, according to this guy, they're essentially lending people money to buy into their own backlog, which, you know, I mean, but, you know, and you sit there and go, this guy can't be right because the stock goes up every day. The whole world, he can't be the only person that sees this. I mean, you know, so I haven't really let it affect my trading whatsoever. And yet, I don't know if you remember this way back in the day. Remember Benji Schwartz? His dad owned a clearing firm on the CME, and anyway, so my buddy Dr. J gets our show was a follow-on to Sports Writers on TV, and it was Traders. We were on a local cable thing, so it was Dr. J, me, Benji, and this other guy, Goran something. We were on this show every Tuesday night, and it was the show that Dylan Radigan, who ended up being the original host of Fast Money, he essentially took our show, or John's show, not ours, but John's show, and sold it to CNBC. And that's why John became...
That's how he ended up over there.
That's how he ended up on CNBC, because we were doing the show here, and we were on some station in Rockford or someplace. I mean, we never really got anywhere. But anyway, one of the guys on the group, this guy Goran, had his dad was a builder and remodeler. He was this big, tall, good looking Armenian dude, and he had this gorgeous wife. She's like 6 foot, and I'm just there going, the guy's got he built a couple of condo buildings where, you know, he sold three of them for the price of the whole building, and he got the other condo for free or was able to sell it. I mean, his family was very successful. I think the dad died or was in the hospital or something. So he takes over the company, and he's managing the money. And he's got some dough. He figures out, somehow or another, he gets, before podcasts, he figures out that this Tenet Healthcare, this has to be 20-some years ago, this Tenet Healthcare has some sort of an accounting problem or something, sort of like this podcast with this guy with NVIDIA, which, you know, again, I have 2% believe. But it's a rumor. You know, it's just a rumor. So he's shorting the bejesus out of Tenet Healthcare. The thing goes up every day, and the guys just get squeezed. He think he blew through his whole family money that he was managing. He blew through all his own dough. We stopped doing the show, and I lost track of him. I don't know what the end date was for the guy. Sure enough, like a year later, this story comes out, the stock's traded like 7 or something. Turns out he was kind of right all along, but it just, you know.
But it was wrong timing.
Wrong timing, and you know this stuff can happen, there's a lot of bad stuff running around in somebody's stock. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff about Apple. Do you realize how much trouble they're in China? I have no idea how much trouble they're in China. You know, it doesn't seem to be affecting them at all. I mean, does it? I mean, or at least, you know, do they have enough investors to think it doesn't? I mean, you sort of never know. And all of a sudden, one day,
it's like a tipping point where you know, there are bad things that are going on, but until it starts to show up in the actual stock price and people start asking the tough questions, and they don't ask the tough questions when the stock keeps going up.
No.
You know, I love how the CEO of Barings Bank on their earnings call, shortly before they found out everything was a fraud over in their Far East operations, where, you know, basically somebody was lying about the trades that they were doing. When they asked the CEO about record earnings, he said, you know, our Far East operations is doing some great work in arbitrage trading, and, you know, as long as they're doing great over there, we're going to just let them keep doing what they're doing, as opposed to going step by step explaining how they are doing what they're doing. And that's a huge issue, especially as things get more and more complex. And, you know, 10 years ago when Bitcoin tightened, I guess it's been a little more than 10 years ago, but once we started introducing Bitcoin futures, Bitcoin options, things like that, you would hear guys, and this is over a decade ago, you'd hear guys that ran financial firms talking about how blockchain was going to make their business so much better. We're not clearing trades. It's 10 years later. We're not using blockchain. We're not using that same technology to clear trades.
No.
We're not using it. It's not being used for, you know, all kinds of record keeping, et cetera. You know, it's a technology that they're still trying to figure out what it's going to do. But you heard some really, you know, widely respected CEOs that would say things, you know, that say things like I was just saying, without really realizing that when you say something like, we're going to use blockchain to track everybody's stock holdings and all your stock trades, and the blockchain is something that you can't change in retrospect, well, what happens when you have a trading error? And the second you say that, all of a sudden the whole idea behind using it just completely fell apart. But, you know, they hadn't really thought through what they were, you know, how the technology was actually going to make them some money. I got the same attitude about artificial intelligence right now.
Oh yeah.
The only people that are making any money from artificial intelligence are the companies that supply the hardware that you need to try to replicate a human brain in a machine.
Well, it's
that's pretty high end expensive stuff. But let's say let's just say you master that one. You know, that you do figure out some way to make money with artificial intelligence. I heard a portfolio manager that's doing nothing but using AI for all of their trading decisions. And the biggest issue they have is that other people's AI can follow what they're doing just by, you know, repiecing everything that's going on in the markets.
What do you think would happen if I said that AI is PTI is going all AI? Are you get some clients or what?
Yeah, well, it would help you tremendously.
Okay.
We figured out. I saw where a big hedge fund said that they have, without sharing anything whatsoever, they just, you know, I'm sorry, I just got completely I completely got distracted. Something just happened in the house. We were talking about the Bitcoin thing,
yeah.
And you're going to have to help me get back on track.
Sorry,
I had a brain thing. I'm sorry.
No problem. I was going to actually follow up on you here pretty soon anyway, because.
I'm going to tell you what happened. My wife just put a note in front of me that said our daughter forgot her iPad and she has to take it to her at school.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
And that just made me angry. So I totally lost track of what I was.
Well, she didn't say you take it to her.
No, she didn't say I should take it to her. She said she's going to take it.
Well,
to
then
her.
It's your no harm, no foul.
Yeah. Exactly.
No blood, no call. But
everything loops back around to that whole stupid fear of missing out thing.
What it also comes down to, where's the risk? I mean, if you and I, I'll go back to the I was going to put an ethnic name on it, but I won't. The old guy with the six flat. You know, and he goes, okay, how much you making, son? I'm making $100,000 a year on the rent and so forth, and okay, my interest rate's 10% I want return, I'll give you $1 million for it. Is it, is, you know, you're up on on maintenance and so forth? Yeah. He didn't even have to see it. Okay, he knows that. And you know what? If the next day he can only find a $900,000 bid, he doesn't care because he's getting his $1,000 grand a year, and he's happy. You know, and he's not looking for it.
Yeah.
But and all the stuff we've talked about, you know, what is the Bitcoin risk? What is the, if any, what's the China risk, if any? The thing that concerns me for my clients especially is the stuff is so high. I mean, I think people, and when I say people, me too. Russell, someday we're going to have a cup of coffee. You're going to have to explain to me what $1 trillion looks like, because I it's above my pay grade.
It's got a lot of zeros.
I mean, we're going to have to change the if you had $1 million, what would you do when we start the show? It's got to be if you got $1 billion.
Yeah,
$1 million is chump change now. So, but I mean, yeah. I'm concerned that when we talk about this NVIDIA up $10, down $10, mostly up $10, it's $240 billion in market cap. Does anybody even have a clue what these numbers are meaning here? I mean, that's more than like the biggest company that was around 20 years from now ago. So I mean,
oh yeah, no, that's
so my, you know, my concern is if Bitcoin blows, which I'm not predicting, if it blows from 60 to 25, we've got 172,000 people that just took over $500,000 bath. That's a lot of sucking sound, and if all of a sudden, you know, something weird happens in NVIDIA, they, you know, Microsoft finds something else, like Kevin was saying, they buy another firm or whatever to do their, and they're no longer, I'm not predicting any of this stuff. All I'm saying is, what if this thing drops to 50, we're talking $2 trillion of wealth. We're not talking about, you know, and if Costco were to go, were to drop down to something, you know, if it was 35 volatile or 35 PE, you wouldn't say, God, 35 PE on a retailer is such a cheap thing. I'm gonna mortgage my, you know, my Frenchie to buy some of this stock. But this stuff is traditionally very high. Somebody was saying yesterday that the next year we're talking 23 PE on the S&P 500. It's, I don't know if it's record, but it's pretty friggin' high. I mean,
I've never heard of it over a 20.
Yeah, well, he's talking 23.
If I were in class and a student just threw that out at me, what you just said, I'd say I have to look that up because I don't think that's an accurate number.
Well, I think he was talking about, you know, next, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So,
but I mean,
that's how far of an outlier it sounds to me.
Well, I mean, when Costco's 55, I'm not surprised the S&P is 23. Because look at the biggest stocks in the S&P. They're all.
Well, that's I mean, you know, the biggest ones are the tech stocks, and they've got, you know, pretty high PEs.
Yeah.
So I guess I can kind of see that, but still.
But I'm saying normally, you sit there. Okay, it's a $120 stock. What if it goes to 60 because they have some problem? You and I would say, not necessarily. So what? But the thought would never cross our mind that that's $1.5 trillion.
Right.
I mean, why would it?
I mean, that, you know, we look at $128 stock price, and a lot of people don't even know what that means. That's one of the fun things about teaching freshmen.
Well, yeah,
you get
to
explain to them what it actually means.
I thought you were doing all grad students these days.
I volunteered to step up and do something.
That's a problem with you. You can never say.
I know. I can never say no, and I'm gonna. You know, they say Einstein dropped dead. You know, he dropped dead in his hospital bed with a yellow pad and a pencil in front of him, trying to work out the theory of everything. I'll just drop dead with a 2.5-page-long to-do list.
You know what, though? The world needs people like you, and the reason why, you got to hope there's a heaven.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
I mean, you know, it is. There's people that, you know, can't say no, and there's other people that are pretty easy at it.
I mean,
I got a feeling that as soon as somebody adopts the pooch, if they drop another one on your doorstep, you're not going to kick her out.
Probably not, even though we keep saying that we're done. I know what we do and what we say are two very different things in the Rhodes household.
Well, I don't. I mean, I'm gone all day. I don't. And plus, my dog walker is using his own walker, so he can't be much of a dog walker. And sure enough, Audrey and I are driving. I don't know where the hell we were going. Of course, she has to buy plants like 40 miles away because they're cheaper, right? Okay, so anyway, we're going down to Kankakee or someplace to buy plants.
Yeah.
And of course, we're driving along, and there's this. She goes, "Hey, look at that coyote." And I go, "What? It's not a coyote, it's a dog in this field." And he looked skinny as hell, like somebody had dumped the poor guy off. So, of course, we're stopping. And as soon as we stop, I sit there and go, "All right, if this guy comes when I call him and he's in,
he's domesticated.
All of a sudden, the two of us are going to have to work it out." I'm not going to kick him back out. I'm not going to drop him at a pound if he's a good boy or a girl. I mean, what am I going to do? I'll have to find another dog walker. I mean, once you pull over, you're committed, right?
That's right.
If he hops in the back seat and I get him some water and go right to the place where I can buy some dog food because he can see his ribs, you know what? And if he's a good boy, he's in. I mean, and somehow we'd figure it out. I mean, I don't know. We'd have to have the girl downstairs walk her and have to do something. But, you know, I'm not going to kick him back out. I mean, you and I are just like that. I mean, just it has its negatives, but it has its positives. I mean, look at your daughters are the same way. You know, so, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. You know, so that's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, did she have this weather predicted last night?
Did she have what?
The weather predicted last night?
She was not at home. I was home alone while all of that was happening. But she'd have been able to tell me, yeah, there's a good chance that we're going to have one of these pop-up things a little bit later on.
Really? Because they already knew.
There's one weather guy for all of Major League Baseball, and I want her to get that job.
Really? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how did they know? I mean, I'd love to get her back in. How did they know that far in advance that there was going to be hail in it? How can you tell?
Upper atmosphere disturbances combined with some of the temperature changes.
Okay, because I mean, sometimes
Have you ever been around a tornado?
Yeah.
Okay, you know, have you ever been around or maybe driving in the middle of nowhere and you've got the temperature thing on your car?
We were driving.
Look down, and all of a sudden it's dropped 20 degrees.
Okay, we should be heading here, but I'll go one more minute. Yeah. My nephews, of course, you know, nephews being nephews, we're going to go out and drive out skiing, right?
Yeah.
Now, my brother was given a seminar in L.A., so he's going to meet us in Steamboat. He's going to fly in. So we're driving out. Of course, they're late, so we're running late. And so instead of stopping for the night, we just pull over to a rest stop. But we're driving along in Nebraska, and the weather is horrible. And if you looked up, you could see these clouds. And you see stuff starting to twirl down and go right back up in the cloud.
There you go.
It was absolutely freaky. And there's wherever town you were in, the AM station would go off, and you'd just hit the seek button, and you get the same weather girl in the next town. So people are phoning in the weather. And, of course, there's this one jamoke. He goes, "Man, I'm seeing this funnel cloud right in front of me." And she goes, "Where are you?" "Well, I'm in my truck." "Where's your truck?"
truck, man.
Well, the good news is my nephews were late. All of a sudden, about 40 miles ahead, I don't know, she could probably tell me, I don't think it was a tornado, but it must have been some kind of microburst. There had to be 50 trucks in the ditch. Just laying on their side. And a couple of vans. I don't think cars got blown, but it was those poor guys. I mean, there's your livelihood, your home, and everything else all gone. And I mean, and if we'd have been an hour earlier, you know, that would have been us. Now, I'm thinking the pickup truck wouldn't have been in the ditch. It would probably have been okay, but the semis had no chance. It must have been some kind of microburst.
I'll see that. You know, I do the ride back and forth to Indiana every week. So I see them struggling with the wind every once in a while.
Yeah.
No, all I was going to say is that the temperature drop that you feel that generally occurs right before a tornado hits, it's usually just out of nowhere, 20 degrees. Those upper atmosphere disturbances that they can pick up on now, that's an indication that you might have some sort of pop-up storm. That's how they're able to do that far in advance.
Well, it has.
Now, beyond that's, we leave it to our weather person for the rest of that explanation. That's what I know.
Real quick, too late to be real quick, but that huge hailstorm that hit Orland, where Audrey lives, I still got the pictures of the 6 inches of hail on the back porch. This is in May.
Yeah.
It knocked every blossom off her pear tree, off all the oak trees and stuff. the animals are having a real problem because there's no pears, there's no raspberries, there's nothing. Yeah. And there's no acorns. These squirrels are running around trying to find it. It knocked. They're going to lose an entire season for probably a 2 or 3 square mile area. Actually went all the way to like Midway, but their area was the worst. There's no fruit on anything. There's a guy in an apple orchard by all the way. I don't think he's going out and buying apples. I mean, that stuff, your blossoms never come back from a hailstorm.
No.
Anyway,
we gotta help the squirrels.
Oh yeah. Her poodle is a great squirrel.
Save the squirrels.
Save the squirrels. S&P futures down 1. NASDAQ futures up 11. If you were flipping a coin, which way do you figure NVIDIA? It seems like they're always up, so you kind of got to go there.
They haven't had a bad one in almost 3 years, so yeah. I think we're due for a bad one.
You're one of these contrary sort of dudes. You know what that?
Yeah.
I'm hoping you're right, but I'm not playing it either way. So anyway, if the prices change, I might.
If it starts going down, you're going to believe me.
Oh God, yeah. All right, bud, we'll talk at you soon. Have a nice weekend. Labor Day, you're in town here, I assume.
I'm celebrating big time today. Today's my birthday.
Hey.
All right, now let's go.
Good for you. Happy birthday. 35?
I wish I could say that just reversing those numbers would get you there, but it's even more than that now.
Oh, God.
So, I'm Heinz 57, baby.
Well, good for you. That's actually a good age. You're good. You never would have been hurt if you weren't on the stupid board.
Yeah.
But you're in good shape. You're good. You're good for another 50. S&P futures down 3. NASDAQ futures down 23. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.